fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to the pod that put the arse in podcast. My name's Johnny Gould, former presenter of Channel 5 Baseball, Wednesday and Sunday night, midnight through till 5. And I'm joined, thankfully, in the hot seat by my baseball brothers, Eric, the producer, and JC, Josh, the greatest sports pundit the world has ever known, Chetwin. Now, JC, I've got to come to you first of all, big guy. You're here for two consecutive weekends. Shock, horror, stop the press. Has Mrs. Chetwin dumped you?
I don't think I've missed a show, Gouldie.
I've never missed a show, buddy, but normally not getting you back-to-back weekends because you're such a busy man.
Well, it's because I love you. And isn't it putting the as in podcast?
Right. But I just thought it was funny, okay?
Your humor is one of a kind, Gouldie.
Don't let the specifics get in the way of a good line.
Absolutely. Okay. Fair enough.
Anyway, buddy, always a pleasure. Eric, how are you, big man?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Oh,
that doesn't sound very positive.
I'll give you a hug, Eric.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Actually, I'm excited that the season's now underway and we're back doing this, the thing we love. Season 4, would you believe?
Unbelievable. Reunited feels so good. And I should say episode 1, but it isn't episode 1 because our regular listeners would know that obviously we did sort of like a baseball classic, world classic show that counts sort of. That's the one. that sort of counts. I'm assuming that counts as episode 1.
Yeah, so this is episode 2 technically.
Episode
right?
2 of season 4 of Major League Baseball. Fantastic. Talking of biblical references, by the way,
We were talking of biblical references. That was not a tidy link. That was the most untidy link of all time.
This is season 4. I thought you must have run out of biblical references now.
Right? Well, I have. So I've gone to the tarot cards. I've gone tarot.
Jeez.
It's apparently the number 2 card is the High Priestess's card, and it symbolizes wisdom and good judgment, unless it comes up upside down and then it indicates making poor decisions. So is this going to be an upside down tarot card or an upside tarot card?
Our whole life has been upside down.
It certainly has. Anyway,
Eric is dark today. He's got a little dark.
We need to have a chat off air, find out what's actually going on in Eric's world, because clearly something dodgy is happening. Anyway,
right.
Do you know what'll put him on the right track, JC? We can ask him for a COVID update. That always puts a smile on his face.
Well, you know what? That's the thing. For the past 3 seasons, we've always had a COVID update. What's happening now? What's the protocol? What are the restrictions now in Major League Baseball and in life? Well, I think we don't have to do this anymore. I think this is it. This is our there's no more restrictions.
It doesn't mean it's gone away.
It doesn't mean it's gone. Fingers crossed. We don't have to do anymore. We don't have to go back in time, but it's still not gone completely. But I think we don't have to do COVID updates unless it rears its ugly head again.
Hey, guys, if Djokovic is allowed to play tennis in the U.S., then there's clearly no point for any COVID updates.
Yeah. And anyone can play in Toronto now for baseball.
Correct. Yes. We're moving on from the COVID thing. And let's hope fingers crossed, that is the case.
Okay, well, before we get into the show, let's do our usual the Johnny and Josh show, big up, social media, stuff that JC and I really don't understand. YouTube's back, by the way, so you can actually see us. You can actually see us, see how old and dinosaur-esque we are. We have, it'll make you feel a lot better about yourself. 3 really old, ugly men coming into your back garden. Do check out the channel. Point down at the bottom. I have to point at the bottom because apparently at the bottom of the screen there's like. And likey-likey.
Subscribe.
I like this. Yeah. It's like thumbs up and pointy.
Should we nick that line from that great dating show, likey-likey? We could do likey-likey. Isn't that it? What's that? I can't remember.
Mean St. Louis. But anyways. yes, and also our social media. Facebook. Wax Lyrical, Johnny.
Facebook. Wax Twitter. Lyrical, Johnny. Twitter, Instagram. You name it. You're on it.
So we're not on TikTok. We should start doing TikToks.
Have you done any TikToks?
Most resolutely not done any TikToks.
I can't believe your kids have dragged you into TikTok.
My daughter has. My daughter does some TikTok. TikTokery.
Did she get you twerking?
No, God. No. Knows better. She knows better than that.
There's something I can't get out of my eyes now.
Yeah. Okay. Gouldie's begging for us to ask him if he's been asked to do that. Not going to do it. No, we're not going to do it.
Okay, moving on.
So sad. Goldie, have you ever done TikTok?
I can tell you a trivia question, Eric. Waffle's back already, by the way. So yeah,
I'm not even out of the intro.
I know, but we got to keep it going. Those of you who are new for the show, when we start waffling a bit too much, I hold up a waffle like a yellow card and football referee kind of thing. So we can move on. And moving on to a trivia question. The first trivia question of 2023.
How exciting.
Now, last night, I went to a watch party. No, not something to put on my wrist to tell the time. I went to a party in Stratford, the Westfield Mall, where MLB UK community, and by the way, at MLB UK community, or community, yes, MLB UK community, they hold all these watch parties where baseball fans from around the country can all, congregate in the same area, wear their colors, chat baseball, watch baseball, drink beer, eat Philly cheesesteaks and hot dogs from Passaic Avenue.
All sounds very cool.
And they had actually trivia questions on a piece of paper asking. And I said, I'm going to steal that one. Because
not even doing your own research.
No, because it was actually a pretty good question. So, I'll use that.
So if someone went to that, they're not going to get the benefit of a new trivia question.
Exactly. Already know the good answer. Point, JC.
But some of them have struggled with it as well. So
they got the answer at the end.
If you were at that watch party, then, so you already know the answer.
Switch off now. We've just lost 93% of our audience.
That's 4 out of 6.
Anyway.
Or whatever.
Thank you, everyone who did show up. And thank you, BSUK and BBF, and now all the guys and gals who organize or participate in last night's watch party. Keep an eye on it at MLB UK community, Twitter, Facebook, and all that kind of stuff. Cross promotion. Great people. But the question that I will pose to you, gentlemen, is, and it's a very simple one, who was the last player prior to this season to have hit multiple home runs on opening day?
Ooh.
Okay, so the last player to have hit multiple home runs on opening day, and it was 3 years ago. That's how long ago it was. And was it A, Freddie Freeman, then with the Atlanta Braves? Or was it B, Max Kepler, product of the European Game Development Program? Or is it C, Jock Peterson?
Ooh.
So
sounds familiar.
A, Freddie Freeman, Max Kepler, or Jock Peterson, who was the last player to have hit multiple home runs on opening day? Answer later on in the show.
Okay, everybody, chaos reigns here on the greatest podcast in our back room. This is, of course, leadoff batter number one. It's the news roundup. Right, well, let's find out what's been dominating the news. This season is what? This is the fourth day of the new season. And I suppose the one thing that is very much on top of everybody's mind, JC, is how the new rules that have been implemented are impacting. There were 14 violations called on day one, by the way, where players fell foul. And one of them was quite key, wasn't it? Wasn't it? The timing rule,
the pitch clock.
Devers,
What do you know the details of that, Goldie? Do you know
my understanding is once he looks at the pitcher, he himself has got to get it ready. Was it like an 8 second count?
You're talking about the batter.
The batter, yeah. Okay. Rather, this wasn't the pitcher that was the fault. It was Rafael Devers, wasn't it, for Boston? And it was the third strike, and that was the end of the game. So it was really key. Am I getting this right?
Well, both the pitcher and the batter have constraints in terms of time.
Yeah.
Right. So Eric, it's with no one on, it's 15 seconds.
Correct.
And if there is a runner on, it's 20 seconds for the pitcher. He must deliver. The batter has to engage within 8 seconds of when the pitcher gets on the mound. The other really big rule as it relates to timing is what a pitcher can do in terms of pickoffs. They get two opportunities to throw over. After that, they have to throw out the runner on the third pickoff, or it's a balk, and the runner gets to advance a base, which is also a time-related rule, but has other impacts that we'll talk about. So,
but obviously the big impact is just the speed of the game, and I think that was the key behind it. Are you a fan? Because I know that certainly the games I've watched so far, I much prefer the pace of the game. The games do seem, there doesn't seem to be any sense of drag. There seems to be an intensity. And I know that in the opening day of the 15 games, 10 finished in under 3 hours, around the three-hour mark.
It's effectively shaving off 30 minutes of every game, which is pretty awesome. I think when you look at it from the regular, first off, I don't think any rule should be judged immediately. So I think we need to spend a whole season, look at it at the end of the season, and hopefully Major League Baseball will be open to tweaks relating to it. But all that said, from a regular season standpoint, 162 games, I think it's fantastic. I think that when you have an average Wednesday and you have a family going to a night game and they got to get home, got to get to school, awesome.
Yeah.
My question, sort of the open question, is when you get to the tail end of a game and there's a lot of drama and a lot of excitement, there is something to be said for stretching it out. And I wonder whether in the ninth inning, do you change the rules a little bit? Do you allow the pitcher and the batter to have a little bit more time to play that out? Because, right, baseball at its core, one of its greatest elements is that competition between batter and pitcher. And so much of the sport is about upsetting rhythm. And it's the pitcher upsetting rhythm with the pitches that he chooses, faster, slower, slowing things down, speeding things up. The batter also doing the same thing. There's that cat and mouse game. You lose all that. And I think it's okay in a general sense, because I think the game has slowed down. I saw one pundit saying that it's turning baseball from a board game into a video game, which brings it up to date. And I get that, but I think that there may be times where you're going to want to see it slow down a little bit. So that would be the one element I might consider.
Would you also consider saying that we do away with these rules during the postseason when the games become really key?
I have a problem with that. And I said this before when we were talking about the ghost runner, is that you should have the same rules for the regular season as you have for the postseason. It's not a different season. It's not a different game. These are fundamental elements to the game. So whatever you choose for the regular season, I think you have to choose for the postseason. So perhaps the ninth inning, perhaps extra innings, you expand the clock. We do this in a lot of sports where at the end of the game, we change the rules a little bit. We even change it in terms of when you can look at plays in instant replay in baseball. So I think it's okay to have slightly different rules at different times of the game, but I think that you need the same rules for regular season as you do for post.
Some good points, Eric, that Josh makes there, particularly with regards to the tension of the game. Therefore, do you adapt in terms towards the end? One might also argue that, you know, a big part of the revenue of any club is selling merchandise, selling food, selling drinks. You're shaving off half an hour of every single game. That surely is going to affect the bottom line in terms of their revenue output.
That's right. It's still a little too early to tell whether, you know, hot dog sales, shock horror, will be impacted by this, and beer sales, and that's a lot of revenue for some of these clubs.
I push back on that a little, Eric. I mean, really, television money is the biggest,
of course,
piece of the pie for them. So I think that they're willing to give that up if they get more seats, more fans in the seats.
Don't forget about that. But also, you know, you think of the vendors themselves. Some college kid who's selling beer up and down the aisles, or selling hot dogs. He's lost an hour, maybe 30 minutes of
income. Can I throw in something into this mix, Eric? Because I think it's a valid point, except ultimately it's only shaving off half an hour at the end of the game, not the beginning, not the middle. And my experience of watching live baseball in America is that you drink your beer and you eat your popcorn and your hot dog and everything. You do that in the first half of the game, not at the latter end of the game.
You do. That's very true.
Unless you're Eric. Unless you're Eric, then you're just drinking every single
inning.
Top of the ninth, time for another hot dog. Yeah. By the way, the shortest game, thanks to the pitch clock, was Saturday night's Cleveland versus Mariners, 2 hours and 4 minutes. Who'd have believed?
Wow. Great. I think this is a really interesting rule. I think the one that really is impacting gameplay a ton, well, I mean, there are a couple others, right? There's the shift, and then there's also the base size. And I want to get into the base size first, if we can, because I think that I mentioned the rule about the throws over to first base, the pickoff throws. I actually think that Major League Baseball should have chosen one or the other. Either limit the number of throws over or expand the base size. You didn't need to do both of them from the jump, because I think that the combination is overkill for allowing for stolen bases. I think that if you had the pickoff rule and not expanded the bases, it might have been a little more even, or vice versa. I think that the pickoff rule ties in more to speed of game, so maybe do that one first. I don't think you needed to expand the size of bases as well at the same time. And I think that's playing out, at least in the early going.
You know what makes me laugh about baseball? I mean, you know, you're very much a historian, JC, and I'm still very much a beginner. But it does seem through the ages that baseball has just been this constant battle between, do we give the advantage to the pitchers or to the hitter? And we fix it one way, or we've gone too far. So we go back the other way, or we've gone too far. And it's this merry-go-round of constantly chopping and changing.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on, Goldie. I mean, they lowered the mound in 1968 because pitchers were getting too much of an advantage. That was after Bob Gibson had like a 1.12 ERA throughout the course of a season. They realized, okay, pitchers got the advantage. They're now trying to move it the other way towards offense, but more dynamic offense, right? Not home run strikeouts, no. But stolen bases really add a lot more excitement, I think, for the modern day fan than the guys who are going for all or nothing. The three true outcomes, right? The walk, the strikeout, or the home run really made the game boring. So I get that. And I like that there's going to be more running. There's going to be more stolen bases. The changing the size of the bases is a fundamental element to the game. It changes really the length in which players run. It changes the core factors. And I'm not sure we needed that along with the pickoff rule.
But there was a safety issue because there's a lot of injuries, a lot of ankle injuries. And they're saying that it will be a lot safer because it's a bigger target to particularly running to first.
I'm not 100%. You're not convinced? I'm not 100% convinced. I mean, we've already had knee injuries on the base pass, Gavin Lux, things of that nature. I mean, that wasn't on a base that was running, but I think that those injuries maybe on the margins. So that's the one rule where I'd push back on. What's been really interesting is the shift rule, right? Which is that there's a requirement now that the two infielders on the left side of the infield stay to the left of second base. The two infielders on the right of the infield stay to the right of the of second base. And to prevent these sort of overshifts, particularly against left-handed hitters who are real strong pull hitters. But teams are already trying to work around that, where now they're having the right fielder come in, play sort of a deep second base, which is what they were having with the third baseman previously, and then sort of shifting the outfielders because the rules don't change for that. So I think it's fascinating that back and forth is still there, because my one big concern about that rule was that I love strategy and I love any ways to try and figure out better strategy. So teams are coming up with new ways to do that. And I sort of tip my hat to that.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, batters just need to adapt and don't pull the balls off and actually learn how to put it the other way. But they clearly weren't doing that because of the numbers. You look at the numbers they were going. So obviously, we've always known your views on the shift and you've been very consistent in that. So those are the three ones, the bigger bases, the banning the shift, the pitch clock. Just as a first impression, I know it's ridiculous to ask you for a definitive opinion. We're 4 days in. First impression, more positive than negative? Or the other way?
Yeah, I mean, again, wait for the whole season, but yes, definitely. I like more stolen bases, so even though I probably do it a little differently, so be it. Yeah. I don't have a problem with the shift, especially because teams are still working it, and the pitch clock's carving 30 minutes off of each game, which has been a big issue with baseball. So overall, thumbs up.
And obviously, your love of the stolen base is because you were the Ricky Henderson of minor league baseball.
So I know you're making fun of me. In high school, before I blew out my knee, I led the team in stolen base.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was really good at something called the delayed steal, which is you take a really big secondary lead, but you don't break immediately. And then when the catcher comes up, you sprint because they're not prepared, and then they double clutch. And I had two or three of those in my
wow. season. So,
okay. Now in college, zero stolen bases.
You see what I did there, JC? I sort of made it appear to the listening audience that I was taking the mic, and in reality what I did was I set up yet another statement that established your legendary status.
You softballed me. I appreciate it.
By the way, one thing as well, last year in opening day there were 5 stolen bases, and this year's opening day there were 21 stolen bases. Now that doesn't, there were a lot of players are also thrown out at second or third. So just to say,
which is exciting,
but
it's encouraging positive play, which I like. I think there's been a
huge increase of stolen bases, but doesn't mean it's automatically like, wow, it's a free for all for stealing bases. No, there were a lot of pickoffs as well. And being thrown out in second.
Guys, before we move on to talk about the minor leagues, we should make reference to the three legends of the game that we lost since last season. Let's start with, you're going to have to help me with the pronunciation here, JC. Joe, is it Pepitone?
Pepitone.
Okay. Joe Pepitone. I'll be honest, obviously, I'm still very much a rookie when it comes to the history of the game. So I was looking at the his wiki page. And the stuff that struck me right from the beginning was before he even became a baseball player, he was shot by a classmate at the age of 17 when at school. And it was the same week that his dad died at the age of 39. I mean, that is one hell of a week. But he didn't press charges against the shooter. There's an interesting start in life. What's your memories of him?
He was a Yankee during one of the golden ages of being a Yankee. So he was one of those guys, you know, Italian American. So, you know, you had that built-in audience of the DiMaggio's, the Lazzari's, Yankees, you know, that melting pot that is New York City. When you had players who had some ethnicity, there was even more interest and excitement. And Pepitone was one of those guys. I mean, playing first base with the Yankees. I mean, you think of Don Mattingly, you think of Lou Gehrig. It's a pretty great place to be. And he was a good one. Not a great one, but a good one.
Three-time All-Star, three-time Golden Glove Award winner. So, yeah, I mean, he was decent, clearly. And he even had a season with the Braves, so he must have been a good man. Okay, well, let's move it on. We also lost, and now we're really talking about some legends. Tim McCarver was obviously the catcher, sports commentator, you name it. Now, there's a true legend of the game.
Yeah, one of the best color men, but one of the best summarizers in baseball history, in my opinion. I had a great presentation, never too excited, but very insightful. And, you know, it's catchers who see the game differently, right? They're the one position where you look at the game differently, where you're involved with the pitching staff, where you have to understand how players are positioning themselves. He got it, and he was fantastic. Really one of my all-time faves.
And he was an expo for a year, Eric.
I was just going to say, he had a short stint in Montreal, my hometown. Yeah.
But St. Louis as well. I mean, really, at Phillies.
Well, this is the amazing thing. Right? But he had three stints in St. Louis. Three separate stints. And here's a fact that I think is fantastic. He's one of 31 players only in the history of the game to appear in major league games in four different decades, 50s through to the 80s. And that's amazing when you consider he was a catcher.
Yeah. I mean, it's a reminder back then, and it still exists today, the catchers who were catch and throw guys who really could control pitching staffs, who really knew how to work that part of the game, there was always a job for them. And he was an example of that, right? He was just a dependable, a decent hitter as those types of catchers went, but really dependable behind the plate kind of guy.
Caught 121 shutouts during his career, which ranks him ninth all time. And then we forget, after his playing career was over, incredibly successful broadcaster, and he won three Emmys. I mean, that's a hell of a life led. Hell of a life led.
Absolutely.
So very sad, very sad. Okay, last up. And I'll be honest, this is one of my all-time favorite names in any sport, let alone baseball. And I'm gutted to hear that he's passed away. Gaylord Perry, a five-time All-Star and the first pitcher to win the Cy Young Award in both leagues. What a legend.
I mean, what I love about him is there's no one who embraced cheating more than him. So, you know, he had the Emery board, he threw the spitter. If anyone's seen the movie Major League, you know, you have the pitcher who's like, you know, I put a little Vaseline here and then I put a little jalapeno in my nose. I mean, that was not directly based on Gaylord Perry, but Gaylord Perry, it was the major league version of that. And, you know, he'd go on David Letterman, famous comedian show here in the United States. And he would, you know, sort of wink and say, yeah, that's the type of guy I was.
Vaseline underneath his visor.
I would do whatever it took to be the best player. And, you know, for a lot of that, we wring our hands, right? We wring our hands at steroids, we wring our hands on a lot of elements of baseball. But the way he had that little glimmer in his eye, right? The way that he approached it with a little smirk, and it was too fun not to appreciate. And obviously, it made him a Hall of Fame pitcher.
JC, inducted in 1991, and deservedly so. Let me just ask you this. Obviously, associated with the Giants for the majority of his career. I think he was there for about 8-9 years. But he was also with the Indians for 3 years, the Rangers for a couple of Padres, Texas Rangers, New York Yankees, Atlanta Braves, Seattle Mariners, Kansas City Royals. I always slightly worry when a player moves around that much. Is that just because
he's in demand?
What I love about him too, Gouldy, was that later in life, he would wear a jersey that had all the emblems of all the teams he played for. Because he played for so many teams and he'd go out there to old timers.
And
stuff
lest
like
we
that.
Forget, we met him at the 2007 All-Star game. When we were broadcasting, we were broadcasting from San Francisco in 2007 for the Channel 5. And we met at an MLBPA function. And he was just sitting there and a lot of kids saying, who's that guy? Who's the old man over there?
See, my guess,
Johnny, it's Gaylor Perry's.
My guess, Gouldie, is the teams were incredulous that he could keep pitching at a high level. And so teams would let him go. And there'd always be somebody who'd be like, well, let's give him one more roll out. He'd get out the Vaseline. He'd put the jalapeno in the nose. He'd get it all going. He'd have the emery board. And he'd figure out a way to add more years. I mean, he pitched so late into his life. And that's one of the reasons he made the Hall of Fame, is that his counting stats ended up being really impressive.
Well, he's also in the Giants Wall of Fame. He's in the Guardians Hall of Fame, as well as the Hall of Fame. What an extraordinary player. 3,500 plus strikeouts. He was a five-time All-Star, two-time winner of the Cy Young Award.
Yes, we love him. Leader. Rest in peace.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Rest in peace. One of the greats. And what a great name. You've got to love that name. Gaylord Perry.
Not many people call Gaylord anymore. There's nothing wrong with that.
And the world is a worse place because of it. I can tell you that straight away. Okay, let's move on. You want to talk about the minor leagues, JC. I know you've been a big, big supporter and actually a big critic of the way that Major League Baseball has treated the minor leagues. And yet my understanding is there's some kind of collective bargaining agreement. Give us an insight, and what's your reaction to it?
I mean, this is massive news, and this is something that has been a long time coming. You think about the rights of major leaguers and free agency and arbitration. Minor leaguers have been treated so shabbily forever, and not just by Major League Baseball, but by the Players Association too, who had de facto rights over them in terms of the draft, and yet really didn't do anything major for a long time. Now, Major League Baseball cut down the number of minor league teams and said that they would better remunerate those who were playing. And I wasn't certain that was going to happen, but there were lawsuits that were continuing on this. And finally we have a breakthrough, and we're seeing really significant rises in pay for minor league players as minimum pay. It rises at the rookie level from $4,800 to $19,800. It's a huge rise for a short season. Single A is from $11,000 to $26,200. You have a double A, which is 13.8 to 27.3, and triple A from 17.5 to 35.8. So, you know, these are reasonable rises. There are more medical options. There's an opportunity for a 401k. And, you know, you start to realize that players are now being treated as if they are in a career, not just in a part-time job.
Yeah. But when you consider the average wage in the US, I mean, these numbers seem amazing because they're like double what they were before. Yet the reality is it's still not.
It's crap. You know,
it's still pretty awful, isn't it? Yeah, compared to the rest of the world.
Right, and I sort of, car. That's the thing. It's, you know, some players had to sleep in their own car or couldn't afford to eat.
And it does make me feel that ultimately it's tomorrow's generation of superstars that have it in their hands here to really impact. Because if they insist that change needs to happen, when they've actually got a voice that people have to listen to, then hopefully things will continue to improve. This is a step, though, in the right direction, and I assume you're very, very happy with that.
Yeah, as you said, Gouldie, it's a start, not a finish. Yeah. And I think they need to continue to treat these athletes at a respectable level. One thing that I think some people who don't follow baseball realize, these are professional athletes. Sometimes people say, oh, pro ball, and they only mean the major leagues. You're a professional athlete if you're paid and you're trying to make a living wage off of that activity. And this is not quite there yet, but it's a long way. And I've represented players. I've seen just what they have to go through. And these are players who at least get signing bonuses. But, you know, they're players who signed for nothing, and then this is the only salary they're getting. It's still not where it should be, but we're getting there.
Awesome. Okay, let's round off this first batter up with Badu Watch. Quick reminder to all our listeners, if you're joining us for the first time in season four, we basically started following the career of a new player, Akil Badu, who had this amazing start in front of his parents. We loved it. It was a great story. Hit a home run. The family were going crazy. And so we did a Badu Watch, and we asked you guys to give us a name for this slot. And it was A View to Akil was the most popular one, which I thought was great. But we sort of think, I mean, he is still in the majors with the Tigers. But
the Tigers have now sent him down back to the minors, back to Max Klinger territory. He's back with the Toledo Mudhens and Triple A.
And considering how woeful the Tigers are right now,
that says it all. Yeah. Not good. It's, more on that later. Shot. But yeah, we need to think of a new player. We're going to keep an eye on the season as it unfolds and see who's the new Akil Badu, who's the new hidden gem, diamond in the rough that's gonna like catch her eye, and we'll have to think of a clever name with a pun to do this segment. So goodbye, A View to a Kill, and let's find that new player.
Okay, well, we're open to suggestions, so we'll be giving you details how to get in touch at the end of the podcast, so do let us know your thoughts. Otherwise, we've got to do the work, and you know us. You should know us, but now we don't want to do that. Let's be brilliant. Okay, ring that bell, Eric. Okay, second batter up. We're going to have a look now at the biggest off-season moves and what our thoughts are on them, and more importantly, what the early evidence is 4 days into the season. I'll kick things off with one of my favourites, gutted to see Dansby Swanson not re-signing with the Braves. Obviously, our superstar shortstop, who's I think's been massive for us in the last couple of seasons, particularly the World Series winning season. And now with the Cubs, I think he's batting second, JC. He's had two outings so far. He's 6-for-8. I mean, he hasn't had much production because there's not a lot happening around him, but 6-for-8, I mean, he certainly seems to have started pretty hot for his new team.
Yeah, I'm just not convinced. The other big pickup for the Cubs was Cody Bellinger, and former MVP, but I'm just not convinced that he's going to give him protection. And so no. I think that'll be a struggle. This has been the offseason of the shortstops, right? You have Xander Bogaerts going to the Padres, Trey Turner going to the Phillies. You had Carlos Correa, who was going to go somewhere else and ended up back in the Twins because of his knee issues. It's just been a crazy shortstop-atopia.
I mean, as if the Phillies needed more bats. I mean, Trey Turner, surely that's the biggest signing from a hitting perspective in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, especially we talked about the change in stolen bases. Here's a guy who, under these circumstances now, could steal 60. You put him at the top of the lineup. I mean, that is just an ultimate spark plug. And the Padres are amazing. AJ Preller is an amazing general manager with the Padres. This guy, I mean, there's no such thing as too much depth for him, right? Yeah. I mean, you get Bogaerts, you already had a shortstop, doesn't matter. You have so much depth, figure out a way to make it work. Just get the best players. So that's yet another addition to a team that was already really strong.
Well, you look at that hitting lineup. I mean, the Manny Machado, who was the superstar, now he's got Soto alongside him, who is, in most people's eyes, at some stage is going to be an MVP because he's still only, 23 or 24. I mean, he's still a youngster. He's never really fulfilled his potential, yet he's been a top 10 fantasy player for at least about 3 or 4 years. Do you think this lineup is now strong enough to genuinely threaten the Dodgers?
I do. I mean, the Dodgers didn't do as much. They lost Turner. They went out and got J.D. Martinez. Not really, a one-for-one type of thing. Martinez can still bang, but I'm not sure. A lot of it with the Dodgers is going to come down to pitching. Can Gosselin get healthy? Dustin May, can he live up to his potential? Does Kershaw still have enough gas in the tank? He looked great in his opener.
He did.
But did
Dustin May.
Yeah. He looked really good. Is he going to be healthy? Urias didn't look as good. So if the Dodgers pitching is at its, meets potential, then I still think the Dodgers are the favorite. But if they have some injury issues, which they have had, it's going to be a little bit more problematic for them.
So in terms of biggest offseason moves, in terms of the impact it's had on the team they've gone to, where do you rank Wilson Contreras, who I'm a massive fan, going to the Cards and obviously replacing Yadier Molina, who, let's face it, was a legendary catcher. But I think in the eyes of most, he was more a defensive catcher than he was a hitting catcher, whereas this kid is all about their hitting.
Right. And I mean, I think you're going to get more offensive production out of the catcher position, which is often a difficult position to get a lot of, OPS plus out of. But whether he's certainly not going to be the catcher Yadier Molina is. And there's a lot of debate as to what kind of defensive catcher is he. Is he league average, maybe slightly above, or is he quite a bit below? I've been questions about his pitch framing. He has pretty good pop time. My question has nothing to do with that element of the catching game, but whether or not he is going to be able to control a pitching staff. He's not going to be able to do it the way Yadier Molina did, where there was that level of trust. But is he going to be good enough to get the most out of some good pitchers? And that's a big question. He also, got hit in the knee to start the season, so he's day-to-day. But that would be my one worry is what you got out of Yadier Molina was a catcher who knew how to get the most out of the pitching staff. Will Contreras do the same? That's more important than even the offensive production.
JC, just rewind slightly, because you mentioned Xander Bogaerts, obviously, going to the Padres, leaving the Red Sox. And yet the Red Sox signed Rafa Devers for a freaking 1,500-year contract, it seems. I just don't understand the logic of what the Red Sox are doing in terms of, you've got a really key player. Would you not build the future? Because they're obviously in transition. They've obviously done that with Devers, yet they've let Xander Bogaerts go. And to me, he was very much one of the sort of nucleus players you should have been building the Red Sox future around.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's mystifying the money they spent on Trevor Story last year when they knew that he already had some arm issues, wasn't really going to be a shortstop long-term. And then, of course, ends up having the elbow problem. Even before that, I think his time across the diamond was like 79 miles an hour, which is pretty low for a major league middle infielder. So it makes no sense to me. It's a huge loss. I think there are a lot of questions about the way the Red Sox are going. That said, I'm a big fan of Yoshida. I think that, you know, bringing him over, watching him in the World Baseball Classic, the type of hitter he is, I'm excited to see, you know, what kind of player he can be. But again, outfielder versus a shortstop. You have a shortstop who can be a cornerstone versus an outfielder who's going to be a good piece. Bad choices by the Sox.
Okay. Any other moves that you want to focus on, Eric? We pretty much covered it, buddy.
Well, basically, the Detroit Tigers did, you know, F all. Except, you know, Spencer Torkelson, who was their number one draft pick, is a crock. But hopefully he comes out of the... I guess I'm just bitter today, aren't I? But
How does that happen?
So salty.
But JC, how does baseball get it so wrong? A number one draft pick who actually turns out literally to be a complete
give him time. I don't know, but
I wouldn't say that, but obviously that's the thing about baseball that differs from a lot of, you know, from the NFL and the NBA, right? Which is development is always a piece of the puzzle, no matter how good or talented you are. You're not a finished product. There are like 5 to 6 examples of finished products when they get drafted. So it's always a crapshoot. The two other big ones though, Eric, right? Jacob DeGrom going to the Rangers, massive money there for such a creaky pitcher. And then Verlander going to the Mets is a big one too. Both those guys.
Yeah, David Langell, our esteemed fellow panelist on the show, who arrives here, who comes here time to time, isn't here to talk about his Mets, but I guess we'll have to do it for him. Justin Verlander, who came over to the Mets, already on the IL from the beginning of the season. Jacob DeGrom being shelled on his first outing on opening day. I don't know if you pick them up in your fantasy teams, I think you're scratching your head right now.
I guess what? Justin Verlander was the ace in my pile in my team in the rookie league, which, by the way, JC is playing in, and we are going head-to-head this week. And of course, I didn't just have Verlander in my starting rotation. I also had Luis Severino, who didn't even get to first day of the new season before he hit the IL as well. You are born lucky, JC. How can you take me on in the 1 week when my two superstars hit the IL before the season's even started?
Can we talk about something? So some of the people who have listened to our show probably know that our friend Clive Russell tried to give me the nickname Chet Winge because I was like, whined about some stuff. Gouldy, you are Gould Winge of like epic proportions.
Only when it comes to fantasy.
I'm not
a Gould Winge on anything else.
Stay on topic. Let's get back to baseball.
I gotta say one more thing about this, which is that someone from that league DM'd me, who I didn't know, and said, "Oh my God, you got to play Gouldy. I'm so sorry. Like, that guy whinges so much." And I was like, "I know, buddy. I've spent 20 years of Gouldy whinging.
The world knows."
Oh, this will be
wow. Let's just get back on topic.
I can tell you, every single one of those league members listens to this.
Okay,
podcast.
Let's just get
I'm
back
doing
to
an investigation. I want to know who's been
off-season moves.
JG.
I don't give away my sources, Gouldy.
Hey, I don't need your sources. I'm going to find out anyway.
Okay, let's go. Stick that topic.
We're all getting phone calls. No! Everything. Okay, stick the topic. Do you know what we haven't mentioned?
Pitch clock on you, by the way.
Love it.
Trevor Bauer playing in Japan. You said somebody would pick him up.
Yes, Yokohama. No one would touch him with a barge pole in Major League Baseball. So where does he go? Japan. Yokohama is going to take the Bay Stars are going to take a gamble with him. Hopefully he behaves himself. Time will tell.
Yeah, he's kind of gross. It's funny. I've been watching quite a bit of his YouTube stuff over the offseason for some reason or another. He does something with this guy named the JUCO King. He has a facility out in, I think, Arizona. And one thing you can say about him is he cares deeply about his craft. He's an icky, you know, all those things that happen, gross. But he's a guy who cares a lot about baseball, cares a lot about pitching. That doesn't make him okay or anything like that, but something worth noting.
Do you know, JC, I relate to him. Are you a golf fan? Do you follow golf?
No.
I'm a big golf fan. Bryson DeChambeau, you either hate him or you love him. There's a certain parallel because he's a real studier of the game. He's trying to really change the dynamics of golf and, you know, went into the gym and became a 200-pound mammoth man who could drive the ball 400 yards. He wanted to change the whole perspective. Some people don't like it. A lot of golfing fans don't like it at all. I think there's a similarity because he's a bit of an edgy individual. He's a bit Marmite. You either love him or you hate him. I sort of think him and Bauer share certain qualities that make them very advanced in terms of their intellectual approach to the game, but nonetheless doesn't make them necessarily particularly popular. And obviously, Mr. Paz.
Any other off-season moves that you want to, off that list that you want to talk about? Or have we pretty much?
I think we've pretty much covered it. The one thing that I did want to get your thoughts on was Bruce Bochy. He comes out of retirement to manage in Texas. Surprised by that?
Kind of. You know, he was in France. He managed France in the qualifiers to get in the World Baseball Classic. Fell short. And I guess he just had itchy feet, wanted to get back in the game.
I mean, that Ranger team should be good. I mean, you've got Sager, you got Simeon. Yeah. If DeGrom shows up and is healthy, that's a team that can compete.
Hey, buddy, it's Sunday night. I know it's day three, but they're 2-0. They haven't lost yet. So, yeah. 100%.
All right.
100%. Now, okay, hit that bell.
I just did. Now,
you got to fix your
bell. That is the worst bell.
It's horrible. Yeah.
We can't just pick up on the microphone. Anyways, listen, one thing, you're Dansby Swanson, by the way, just to cap off last night at the watch party hosted by MLB UK community at.
Are you on a retainer for how many times?
I just want free hot dogs and beer next time I go. There was Cubs fans there, and there's one Cubs fan, Rachel, was there, and she's already wearing a Dansby Swanson Cubs jersey. It's like, well, that was fast. Jeez, he still hasn't redirected his mail from Atlanta yet, and you're already, you know. Chicago Cubs fans are already embracing him as one of their own. Well, there you go. Moving on.
Gear. Yeah.
Hey, not like they've had a lot to love in recent years anyway. Moving on swiftly. Not that I'm bitter that we've lost Dansby. Okay, well, interestingly, because we started talking about the impact this was going to have on teams. It's time now, batter three, hitting out a cleanup, is predictions time. This is where the boys have to put their heads on the block and we work out who knows their baseball. And I've been pretty good at this bit, if I'm brutally honest, in the last three seasons. Don't want to blow my own trumpet, but no, I've been pretty good. Okay, do you want me to go first?
Yes, let's hear Johnny Gould's predictions of the 2023 divisionals winners.
Okay, I'm not one of these guys who just backs the favorites, all right? That's what you guys do, because it's boring and it's obvious. I like to go a little left field, although Eric likes to go left field as well.
Eric's on left field. He's on the other side.
He's
on a whole different field. In the bullpen, yes.
He's in the dugout. Yeah. Okay. American League. Okay. East, I'm going with the Blue Jays. Central, I'm going with the White Sox. And West, I'm going with the Astros. I just can't get beyond the Astros. They're just too strong. Do you want to go with the American League before I go?
Give me a dark horse. Who's going to be the dark horse that's just going to surprise everybody in this American League season? I'm glad you put a lot of thought into this.
Angels.
All right, Angels. Yeah.
Angels. Yeah. I'm still not sure about that.
So let's stick with the American League. Josh Chetwin, what do you got for the American League?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you think you're so special, Goldie, because I have them written down, so it's not like I'm copying you or anything. Blue Jays in the East. I have White Sox in the Central. I like their pitching. And I actually, this is my dark horse. I'm going with the Angels to win the West. I think with Ohtani, Patrick Sandoval has looked really good. And that offensive team adding Hunter Renfro to that lineup, along with already the guys they have, can compete with the Astros potentially.
So here's a prediction. I think Trout's going to have a healthy year. There's a prediction for you.
Yeah, he's off to a little slow start, but we'll see.
But he's healthy.
Yeah.
Eric, what do you think?
I like the fact that Josh's dark horse is also the AL West winner. But yes, I I hate to admit it, but I can't get past the Yankees for AL East. I'm actually going to go for Cleveland for the AL Central. Wow. And yeah, Dusty Baker's going to do it again and win the AL West for me. And my dark horse will be Texas. I think Bruce Bochy will turn it around. Texas, yeah. Dark horse.
Yeah. I think that's a great show. That's
all right, show. I'll go National League first then, this time.
You're on that, buddy.
All right, Mets in the East, Brewers in the Central, and the Pods, I think, are actually going to get by the Dodgers. I'm not convinced the pitching is going to stay healthy for Los Angeles.
And your dark horse in the National League?
My dark horse are the Cubs. I like Marcus Stroman, man. He looked great on opening day.
He did.
I sort of believe like he could anchor that. Again, health is an issue with him as well, too. But
And he's such a nice bloke. I don't know if you saw any of the footage online, the way he was with his family during the just recently. And and they said they're going to be at the London series. And he said, you got to let me know. I'll get you guys the whole family tickets. I mean, just came across as such a super chap. So, yeah. I'm a big fan as well. Well, for me, obviously in the East, I'm sorry, one of the best pitching lineups, one of the best hitting lineups. You put the two together, you cannot get beyond the Braves. The Braves are going to win the East. I'm sticking with the Cards in the Central because I just think that hitting lineup's pretty amazing and they've added to it. In the West, I'm with you, JC. I'm the man that predicted the Padres would knock the Dodgers out of the playoffs, which they did, as we know. I think they're going to win the whole thing this season. I think they're going to win the league, the division, the West. So I'm going with the Padres as well. And my surprise, I know this is crazy, but I think the Rockies are going to have a half-decent season. There's my massive outside.
The only way is up, yeah.
That's how you picked a lot of Rockies in your fantasy teams, haven't
you? I have. I know. You're right. You're right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, Marquez and Freeland are, that's a reasonable one, too. It's just pitching where I live in Denver is no easy feat.
No, but it's the same for every team. And at least they're used to it. So, anyway, Eric. Okay.
No other team plays 81 games there, buddy.
Exactly. No. So, my National League picks are, I think I felt like Josh Chetwin copied my homework, but. Yeah, National League East, I think the Mets are finally going to do it and go beyond that NL East probably. And National League Central, I'm also going for the Milwaukee Brewers. And AL West, yes, I think the Padres finally will surpass the Dodgers. But my dark horse...
You just copied him.
I just said that. Yeah. Pay attention.
No, you said that.
He didn't copy. He's like-minded.
I love the fact that he's trying to help me.
He was similar. But
I love the fact that you're helping this being a PC show. Anyways, my dark horse, though, and this is actually through a lot of analytics and speaking to our mutual friend Tommy Gillespie, who's a scout for the Pittsburgh Pirates, is a Pittsburgh Pirates.
Wow.
I think the Pirates are actually, I'm not going to say they're going to win the whole thing, but there'll be a vast improvement, which is, again, you can only...
I think one of the best young players in baseball is O'Neill Cruz. I mean, you look at his exit velocities, that guy can swing it.
Bednar in the bullpen. And, you know, hey, I think the Pirates will surprise a lot of people.
It's the starting pitching that's just really very questionable. That's
give
the issue.
Time. Give
okay.
them time.
Okay, well, there's the predictions. We will rewind at the end of the season to see who's right. Obviously, we don't even need to do that because it's clearly going to be me. And by the way, I just want to thank the two of you for going for the Mets because obviously Big Dave's going for the Mets. There's no way the Mets can win the East now with all three of you backing them. You've given it the kiss.
You just jinxed it, right?
Okay. What I love is that if you're wrong, oh, the joy we'll have. The joy. Pleasure.
Yes. Moving on.
Okay, we're moving on to the seventh inning stretch. It's Eric's time. A little bit of baseball culture. Do we have a book of the week,
Eric? We do, actually. And in honor of this is all lateral. This all ties in together. Let's face it. If you live in the UK, you go to any bookstore, Foyles, Waterstones, or whatever, you go to the sports section, there's like two baseball books, and one of them is always Moneyball. There's not a great selection of baseball books on the shelves in bookstores here in the UK. However, in W. Smith and other places, Out of My League by George Plimpton is a book that's it's really available everywhere. Any train station, I say, wow, I didn't know that George Plimpton was popular in this side of the Atlantic. So Out of My League by George Plimpton, basically it's a 1961, he wanted to see, could he, as a writer, break in the major leagues, just try to see if he can hit a baseball, throw a pitch. And guess who helped him out writing this book? None other than his buddy Ernest Hemingway. And when you got George Fulton and Ernest Hemingway scribing, in the same book, what's not to like? Another thing about George Plimpton is he's also the cousin of Martha Plimpton, who plays Stephanie in the Goonies. That's totally irrelevant, but there's a pop culture reference.
Well, after the success of that book, he did it in football as well. I don't know the timing.
Paper Lion, that's right.
Paper Lion.
This was his first one.
And that was with the Detroit Lions. And he did it in hockey as well. Empty Net.
He did.
With the Boston Bruins as a goalie.
He did with golf as well. Yeah.
I like the concept as well, guys, because my favorite poker book was by a guy called Anthony Holden, who was at the time he was a journo for The Guardian. They used to send him to Vegas for the World Series of Poker. And he ended up earning on a satellite table enough money, $10,000 to enter. And he ended up playing for like 3 days. And I think he came 99th. And when he went home, he told his wife, "I don't know how I can go back to a normal life. It was the most amazing experience of my life." And she said, "Well, you're a rich and successful man. Take a big wad of money out." He took 50,000 quid out and said, "Right, I'm going to spend the next year living the life of a professional poker player. And I'm going to write a book about my experiences." It's called The Big Deal. Really recommend it. You don't have to be into poker. So it's the same concept. It's a great concept. You've got a great, if you write well. It's a great concept.
Relevance to baseball? Zero. Okay.
Well, I'll add one that's a little more relevant, Eric, which is that was done with fantasy baseball as well, too. In that a writer for the Wall Street Journal named Sam Walker decided he'd take a year off of his job and use the ability he had as a journalist to try and get inside information playing Tout Wars, which is considered the highest of the high fantasy baseball leagues. And he hired on a bunch of people to work with him. The name of the book's Fantasyland. It's a great book. I've read this before.
By the way, click on our social media, because I compiled all the baseball books of the week over the past three seasons into like a little like survey, a little bit like a click how many of you've done. So we'll put the link up again as well as a challenge list challenge, if I should say. By the way, going back to George Plimpton, one thing he did as well, because it's relevant with April 1st, in 1985 for Sports Illustrated, he wrote an article about
Sid Finch.
Sid Finch was a player who grew up in a English orphanage, went to Tibet to live for a while and learn yoga, and then somebody discovered that he can throw an 168-mile-an-hour fastball. He was drafted by the Mets. And also, so George Plimpton wrote this in a Sports Illustrated article. The Mets goes, "Oh my God, we're getting somebody who can throw 168 miles per hour." And so Sid Finch was like, everyone's like salivating. Who is this Sid Finch guy coming in? And of course, you just have to look at the date, April 1st, 1985.
Yeah. I remember getting that issue and reading that article over and over again. It was such a wonderful article. I was just a little boy, but yeah.
And then eventually, because it was such a hilarious prank on, and of course, all the Mets fans fell for it. That he wrote a book about it. That's Sid Finch. Keep an eye out for
I love the idea that JC's trying to suggest that he was gullible because he was a little boy. I mean, what's changed, big man? What's changed?
Being open-minded is not a bad thing, Goldie. It's something you should work on.
I can feel a draw from here.
I'm throwing one more book into the fold here, because Tim McCarver, rest in peace, passed away in the offseason. He wrote actually a book called Baseball for Brain Surgeons. Baseball for Brain Surgeons and Other Fans, written by Tim MacArthur, how you can really study the game and know the ins and outs of it. And that's your baseball books of the week, I guess.
It's funny that you know who wrote Baseball for Dummies, which, you know, but the main person wrote that was Joe Morgan.
Joe Morgan, that's
so correct. Two color commentators, ends of the spectrum.
There you go.
Well, that was great, guys. That's definitely a book that I'll be looking out for. Are we doing anything else on the cultural front? Have you got a movie or anything you want to discuss?
No, actually, I won't do. Usually, this is where I actually try to see where baseball intertwines with either a TV show or a movie reference or in any form of pulp culture. But I figure we'll go back into music, Johnny's favorite. The music and baseball intertwine. But I'm going to go with Count Basie here, because in 2 weeks, we'll have Jackie Robinson Day, as always honored Jackie Robinson, April 15th, when he made his debut for the Dodgers. And in honor of Jackie Robinson Day, which did get you in the mood for it, this song came out by Count Basie, and it's something like this.
It's a cheap Jackie Robinson. Hit that ball. It went zooming across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball.
And when he swung his bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball. Satchel Paige is mellow, so is Campanella. Newcomb and Dobie too. But it's a natural fact, when Jackie comes to bat, the other team is through.
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? Did he hit it? Yes! And that ain't all, he's so whole!
Yes, yes, Jackie's real gone.
Hey buddy, I'm shocked I'm about to say this, but I like that.
Thank God for some taste in Golden.
Exactly. Look, does anybody think I'm a whinger? I'm not a whinger. I love it.
Lyrics about Jackie Robinson and Count Basie, of course. And this is, it came out in 1949, 2 years after he broke the color barrier. It rose to number one. It's in the Library of Congress as an important song. And so much so that in 1949, in the infancy of television, okay, Cab Calloway sang the song as well on the Ed Sullivan Show. We'll be playing that later on in the show to sign us out. Because hey, what's not to like? Cab Calloway, Jackie Robinson, Count Basie, Ed Sullivan, infancy television, all intertwines into loving baseball.
It's just a reminder of what a cultural touchstone Jackie Robinson was, and not just a baseball player, but what he meant to America, African Americans. That it's just special, so special.
That's right. And to have Cab Calloway and Jackie Robinson appearing in 1949 on national television on the Ed Sullivan Show, that was a big deal as well. So it's something, that's why it's our song of the week, and get you all ready for Jackie Robinson Day on April 15th.
Even I'm excited about this, big guy. Almost as excited as I am to find out the answer to the trivia question.
Well, let's see what if you cogitated a or hazard a guess in your mind. Earlier I asked you, who was the last player to hit multiple home runs on opening day? And I gave you a choice of Freddie Freeman, Max Kepler, or Jock Peterson. And I guess I'll go with Johnny. Who do you reckon it was?
I think it's between Freddie Freeman and Jock Peterson, which okay. Obviously means it's the other guy. And I just had a feeling it was Jock Peterson. When you said the three, it just seemed to spark something in my memory. Probably wrong, but I'm going to go with Jock Peterson.
Okay, Josh
Taylor. I would go for Freddie if he was still a Brave, but because he deserted us, I'm going to go with Jock.
It wasn't his fault. Okay. He cried. Come on.
So I'm trying to reverse engineer the answer to this because I'm not quite certain who it is. But this was a question at a event in the UK, in Europe. So I'm wondering whether this is an opportunity to highlight European baseball. I'm going to go with Max Kepler.
Interesting.
Okay, I like the logic. You're almost definitely right. You've got me worried now. I think I'm on a loser.
All I'm going to say is one of you is right. It's not Johnny.
Oh, what a surprise. You got to love it. I mentioned two. It's either or. No, it isn't. It's the other one.
So, yes, Germany's Max Kepler did in 2020, hitting multiple home runs on opening day of the pride of European game development in baseball.
Oh, I should have written. You see, that's good logic. That's true intelligence, JC, because you didn't know the answer, but you try to find, why was he asking the question? What's the agenda? What's the hidden agenda? You see, that's true intelligence. That's analytical intelligence. I like that. None of which I have, as you know.
You're all about the looks. You're about the riz. You know that term, riz? You got the riz.
Got the riz. Yeah. Am I the William Hurt of that great TV, that great movie about the presenter? News. That's the one, yeah. Broadcasting News. Remember?
I'm sadly the Albert Brooks. I'd rather be the Holly Hunter. I want to be the Holly Hunter. You're
definitely Brooksy. Yeah. That's
I want to be Holly Hunter.
Just sweating profusely on camera. Fantastic. Yeah. Okay, guys, we've got to move it on. We are nearing the end, not just of our time on Zoom, but also time of the podcast. Don't forget, we are all over social media, whether it be Twitter, Instagram, but tragically not TikTok, but Josh is determined to change that. We'd love you to subscribe, to hit the like buttons, pointy, bottom of the screen, you know what to do. Also, do, by the way, don't forget to check out the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show. If you're an NFL fan, and why wouldn't you be? We love NFL on this show, just as Nat loves baseball. But we're everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, we are there. Now, before we go see you off with our rather entertaining song, I should say, just very quickly, JC, what are you up to this week?
Jen and my wife and my son are coming back from the UK. They were looking at universities. So,
oh, is he going to go to university in UK?
He's considering it. Yeah.
Oh wow, where have they gone to?
I don't want to mention, just because, you know, if he ends up
anywhere but Durham, because anything
that Durham, he's going to go to Durham. God,
anything that comes
awesome
out of there is tainted.
Hey, I've still got connections. You want me to put in a word? You know,
That makes me very nervous.
I think that might explain why Tommy went to Exeter. He didn't want to go. Hey guys, one thing I didn't tell you: my stepson Miles, who had some tough times, and really hit some all-time lows, like so many kids, particularly during COVID, so many kids did. And he's really found himself. He's now working in London. He's working in recruitment. He works incredibly hard, but he's really got into boxing. Last night, this was Saturday night, because we're recording on Sunday, he was involved in a boxing event, an amateur boxing event, but like a really professionally put on amateur boxing event at the Indigo, which is in the O2 Arena, next door to the main arena where Anthony Joshua was fighting his heavyweight title event on the same night. And he was part of this boxing organization, his second only fight of his whole life. He's been training unbelievably hard. He got knocked on his ass in literally 5 seconds into the first round. This guy caught him with a combination, absolutely sent him literally through the ropes. I was there with his mum, my Lulu, and, you know, it was like, oh my God, this is a disaster. He got up, brushed himself down, they let him continue, and he stopped the guy in the second. And he won the fight.
And it was
voted bout of the night, guys. What about you, Eric? You got anything exciting you want to share with us?
Actually, I got to start preparing for the Major League Baseball game development program. I'll be traveling to exotic places such as Barcelona, and as well as Toulouse in France, and as well as Slough.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, Farnham, which one I'd be looking for.
Farnham is not Slough. My one other thing is because I am playing for my club championship in curling this Tuesday. So
you're still playing club curling?
We have a club. You know, we play in the club, and that's how you prepare yourself to play and all the other stuff. And we've made we have a very high end club in terms of skill level. So we made it to the finals, and we're playing in the finals to win the club championship.
So this is like the UK equivalent of the bowls, and you know, when you get to a certain age, you go and play some grass. Nice.
Cannot wait. Right. I would love to get you out curling. We should film it. You would be so embarrassed. I mean, you're not an athlete to begin with, but like to put you on ice, it would just be.
Excuse me, captain of the Epsom College third 15, okay, played 12. On. Played 12, lost 10, 2 rained off. Anyway, there's the waffle.
Have Callaway next.
Okay, that's it from us, guys. As always, absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us. To all our listeners, we're really grateful to have your support, your love, and hopefully you'll be joining us for our next show, which we'll make sure we let you know on social media when that's coming up. It'll certainly be within the next 3 or 4 weeks. We leave you with what I think is, without a shadow of a doubt, the greatest baseball song I've ever heard, and the best one certainly that Eric has ever made me listen to. So for once, this gets the Johnny Gould thumbs up, because no matter what people think, I'm not a whinger. Here it is, Cab Calloway. Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball on the Ed Sullivan Show? Enjoy.
I'm a Brooklyn fan from this side of the river. Every time the Dodgers play, I holler and I shiver. I'm crazy about Hodges, Reese, and Ferrella. But the bum I like best is an all-around good fella. Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? It went swimming across the left field wall. Yes, yes, yeah, man. Oh, Jackie hit that ball. When he swings his bat, the fans go wild, 'cause the ball, it'll go 1,000 miles. Yeah, man. Yes, yes. Oh, Jackie hit that ball. Satchel Paige is mellow, so is Campanella. New coming to
will be too. But it's a natural fact, when Jackie comes to bat, the other team is through. Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? Did he hit it? Yeah, man, and that ain't all. He stole home. Yes, yes. Ho, Jackie, hit that ball. Now Billy Cox is mellow, so is Umbrella, Branker and Preacher Row. But it's a natural fact, when Jackie comes to bat, the other team is through. Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? Yes, he hit it, man, and that ain't all. He stole home.